This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week we have a guest visiting us here in Houston, actually, Mr. Mike Pisciotta. Now, Mike has not been someone I have personally met nor spent any time with until we actually had this interview, although I did watch him perform at the Magic Castle. When I was there the last time I worked, after I'd finished my early evening shows, one of my friends said, "You need to go downstairs with me and see this guy in the hat and the hair pub." And I went down and was blown away. He really is good. He has an engaging personality and was mixing drinks at the same time, so he kind of does it all. He's a master mixologist and magician and mystifier, and he is good enough that he actually won the Academy of Magical Arts Close-Up Magician of the Year this past year, and he was up against stiff competition like John Armstrong and Richard Turner and Bill Goodwin and others. So he was... again, had some pretty stiff competition for him to pull that through. But he also refines his act and has a different act that he does actually in the close-up gallery than what he does down in the bar, and yet even a different act than he does whenever he's performing corporate strolling. And so in this podcast, we sat down after he had lectured with us here in Houston, went back to his hotel room, and we chatted for a little while, and I think you're going to enjoy a lot of things we had to talk about. It's a nice and a concise, just kind of to the point, a lot of things that you will hear, you won't hear anywhere else, and he is a very interesting individual, and I'm glad now to call him a friend. I enjoyed talking with him, and I think you'll enjoy our chat with Mike Pisciotta here on The Magic Word. Hello, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I've got with me as my guest today, all the way from Los Angeles, California, and the home for the Academy of Magical Arts, the Magic Castle, the resident bar magician there. Here's Mike Pisciotta. How are you, Mike?
Hi, how are you? It's Pisciotta.
Pisciotta.
Yeah, don't worry, it's a tough one.
It is. You know, I've heard it pronounced, and I'm sure you have heard it bastardized many ways.
More often than not, so I am in no way offended ever.
Pisciotta. Okay, there is a place over in Louisiana, I think it's Lake Cashada. Which is a casino.
Nice.
Too. So you've never been confused with a casino.
No, but if I put a C on there, maybe I could get some of that.
sweet, sweet money. Yes. Yeah. Well, I mentioned the castle, and congratulations. You were the 2015 winner for the Close-Up Magician of the Year.
Yep, the current. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so my question about that is, what was that like? I mean, as far as the process, I know everybody who is there is a nominee, so I kind of joke about, well, at least I was nominated, but actually it comes down to just a handful of actual people who actually get the votes.
Yeah, well, it was amazing. It still is amazing, and it was a complete surprise for me because it was my first nomination. Mm-hmm. I've been working the room for a while, and I've been the resident bar magician there for about 4 years, but this was the first time I was nominated for the award, and one of five guys, and I was nominated against Richard Turner and John Armstrong and Bill Goodwin and Andrew Goldenhirsch. Mm-hmm. And those are some great magicians,
right?
You know, and I said when I won the award, I'm like, you know, Richard, I used to have your poster on my wall for many years when I was growing up. And I mean, I'm nominated against guys that I just think are fantastic magicians that I didn't expect to win at all. So it was a surprise for me.
And people could be back-to-back winners. In other words, I think
Bill
Goodwin.
Yeah, you could win two times. Bill Goodwin had just won. Richard Turner had won the year before that. Or actually, Richard Turner was the current.
Okay.
Goodwin had won the year before
But Bill could, or Richard could have repeated themselves.
Of course, yeah. Del Gaudio just won it two times in a row, and, you know, he did a back-to-back like that before.
Right. Well, but whenever that they had told you, did they call you, give you an email?
How'd you find out?
No, I'm talking about whenever that you were nominated as far as saying you were going to be among the six nominees.
Oh, of the five. Yes. I got an email. I got an email slightly an hour before it was announced to everybody else. Congratulations.
Wow. And so that had to be like, wait a minute, am I reading this right?
Oh, yeah, awesome. Super cool to be nominated. And then once I was nominated, I didn't think a lot of people win their first time. Mm-hmm. like I said, Andrew Goldenhurst is, I believe, a two-time Parlor Magician of the Year. Fantastic. I always say if aliens land and they say, what's magic, he's one of the guys that I think I'm going to put
something?
Him in front of.
Yeah. He is incredible.
He just seems magical. But anyway, I think he's been nominated for that 12 times now in the close-up. Yep. And I was like, well, you know, you get nominated. That was a huge honor. It really was an honor to just be nominated for me.
Well, Rob Zabrecki is another guy. You talk about an alien, you know, coming down.
That guy is an alien that came down and from Planet Cool.
Yeah, that's where he's from. Planet Cool. From Planet I like that. Cool, man.
That guy is—he's too much. That is, if he's working, he's a must see.
He's one of my favorites. Yeah, oh, yeah. When I worked with him, it was him and Tina Leonard, and I'm trying to think of the group that who else was with
Arden
him. Arden James. Yeah, was there. They're always a fun weekend.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah,
those three. I think they've done it together quite a few years now, and they are so good together.
Now,
and all of them are so good on their own.
But and Rob is a member on the board too, isn't he? And how does that work? As far as I guess you can be a board member as well as nominee and win an award, or what's the status on that?
Yeah, you can be. I don't think there's a rule about that. I don't know.
Because I thought John Armstrong had won, and he was on the board at the time.
No, I think John Armstrong won, and then I think when he got on the board, he didn't check that box to be considered for nomination. He wasn't for quite a few years.
Okay.
While he was on the board, as far as I know.
Okay, well, I don't remember on that. Well, going back as far as...
This was the first year he had come back, because he wasn't on the board anymore, so this was the first year he was back on and was once again nominated.
Yeah, and rightly so. I mean,
of course.
Yeah, he's got a lot of really great guys that are working out there. And speaking of the bar, that you've been working the bar for a number of years. Did you know Bob Jardine, by the way?
I do know Bob Jardine. I don't know Bob Jardine very well, and I never got to see Bob Jardine doing my gig. He was the last guy there that did what I do.
Right, because he was working the Hat and Hair way back when.
Right, and it's been about 30 years since. I know he did it and then left and then came back, and it's been about 30 years.
So there's really nobody in between? There wasn't
there was Jim Patton, but Jim Patton didn't do what I do, and he didn't do what Bob Jardine did.
He wasn't really a bartender.
That's what he did.
Okay.
He was a bartender, and he would do magic for the guys, at least in my experience with him. And when I first moved to the castle, to L.A., I did move to the castle. I didn't live in there, but that's why I moved to Los Angeles. I went there specifically just to be a member.
You moved there from where?
From Colorado.
Okay.
And I would go in just I'd go every night. I'm from Pueblo, which is about 2 hours south of Denver.
Because I lived in Denver for a while. I worked in a newspaper, actually.
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Pueblo. Mm-hmm. And I moved there just to be a member. I'd go every night or at least, you know, 5 nights a week or so. And the nights Jim was there, I would just plop down at Jim's bar because, boy, that guy was good.
Yeah.
And he would do magic for the guys. Like, we would talk magic, and he'd tell stories about Charlie and Vernon, and he'd do something amazing. And then when a customer would come in, he'd just put that away, and he'd serve some drinks. Mm-hmm. And so I never saw him do a full, like, show. Like, come on, guys, gather around. Yeah. Here's 20 minutes.
Which is what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do about 6 to 10 shows a night, 4 nights a week.
I remember Bob Journey, and the reason I mentioned him is because I remember him as a bar magician whenever the first time I had come to work the Magic Castle, and I want to say it was 83, I believe, maybe 81, anyhow. Remember him leaning over the counter over there, you know, over the bar, saying, so are you one of those hot shot magicians who won a contest and that's why you're here? And I said, nope, I've entered, but I've never won a contest. And he stuck out his hand and said, welcome, glad to meet you. Glad you're here.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah. I don't really know him all that well. I've met him a handful of times, and I don't know if he knows who I am.
He gave me a cloisonne pin, you know, that had his caricature of him with the beard and the curly hair and the glasses. And I've got that pin actually framed at home in the bathroom.
I wish I could see him at the bar.
So what does he do now? I mean,
I think he was just there this past week for Veterans Week. He comes back often for Veterans Week, and I'm pretty sure he was just there. I've been on the road doing this lecture tour, so I wasn't there, but I'm pretty sure Bob was just there.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen him for a while. I wish I could see him at the bar. I would love to see what he did.
Do you like working the bar better than the close-up room, or equal, or?
It's different. It's a different game. I like them both. You know, the close-up room is much closer to what I do in the real world, outside of the castle. So that's my private show work, and I get to do things in there that I don't get to do at the bar.
Like what?
Well, use the table for one. The when I first started doing the bar, I had a whole bunch of tricks in mind that I thought would be good for that, and it turned out a lot of them were not, because they took place on the bar top, and I thought that was a big benefit. Mm-hmm. Well, it is nice from time to time when I have 5 or 6 people at the bar, but when I got 30 people in that room and they're straining to see, my hands are up high.
Yeah.
And it's much more like parlor magic in that respect.
I call it up magic. It's kind of good.
It's
up,
like parlors. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, people are going to see it. And I didn't realize that when I first got that. And so when I do the close-up room, I get to work out a lot of the material that uses the table.
Right.
And in the real world, sometimes I get to use that table. And so that's good to have that material also. So I like them both, obviously. And in fact, when I do the close-up room, I always work out new material.
Yeah.
And that was like going in now. I just did it a month or two ago. And going in as, I had just won the awards this year. And I'm like, well, shoot, I got to be good now. But I'm like, but I'm also things, not going to waste this time, because I have 30 shows to work out pieces.
Yeah.
And that's what I use that for. So I say, well, in my private shows, I need to add some material. So I want to work out 2 to 3 pieces in that week to take into the real world. But what that means is at least half my show is new every single time I've been in there. Hmm. I've never done the same act in there twice. I always, at least half of my show is new. This time about 90% of the show is new. Hmm. And some of it I changed by Wednesday. It wasn't what I wanted it to be. It wasn't going. It was Wednesday I made change. Thursday I dropped a piece altogether and added in a new piece. But that's what that's for. I get to do these shows with this type of material.
And you do them back to back, like 4 or 5 shows. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. You do 4 shows a night, and that's awesome. Yes, the bar, I get to work out new material too. Sometimes that's even harder to do that, because people come down and they want to see this. They bring guests in to see these things. It's, you know, I didn't go to a Bruce Springsteen concert to hear some new crap. You better play Born to Run.
That's a very good point. And I find that there are favorites that whenever I go back and have a client will say, hey, then why don't you come back? And we do that thing for our manager, this guy, you know, and we got a special trick that we really enjoy that you did, but use his name this next time or something. And so I kind of feel that the same way. It's like, I want to do something new, but it's like, you wanted to have some of the hits that people will enjoy.
Yeah, and for sure. And I have to change it up just for my own sanity too down there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have, well, these are the things that if I don't do these things, they'll come up and say, hey, where's the lemons?
Yeah.
Hey, what about those coins? And then I'll say, oh yeah, sorry, I didn't get it. Well, hey, well, maybe we'll stick around and watch another set. And I'm like, okay. So I just do them.
Because you have a cup and ball routine, as I recall it.
Chop cup routine
is really good. Yes,
really fits the environment.
Yes,
I use one of the shakers and a cork.
Have you tried to originally plan your routine around bar magic or things at the bar? I assume.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, I use. There are certain tricks that immediately came to mind. Steve Bedwell's shaker trick, because I almost said the name of my version of it, which I like Steve's better, to be honest, although I really do like mine depending on the circumstances. Shake, Shuffle, and Twist, I believe it's called. Mm. Steve Bedwell's great routine, and that was one, and Chris Korn has a great routine. I immediately implemented, and that's all I'll say about that. Because people ask, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's too good.
Chris has awesome stuff. He's another creative guy.
Oh, you know, I love working with him. Chris is a dear friend of mine and one of my favorite magicians.
You're not a foodie, too, are you?
And he's a good cook, too.
Yeah.
No, he's a dear friend and one of my favorite magicians. Love his thinking. I love his style. I love his hands. He's fantastic.
He's a great guy to be around, too. He's just a very friendly guy.
Always,
Be sure to say hello for me.
I will. He's getting married. He has a beautiful fiance. He is.
Okay. Yeah. He's been traveling all over the world here.
Yeah.
Late, seems like. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he met her in Italy.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so. But yeah, great guy.
So you've been working the bar there, and so you don't see any ends in sight then necessarily, do you, as far as working the bar?
No, I'm not. I'm not planning on leaving anytime soon. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's for me. It's
so people will be able to see
my teeth
about any time.
Yeah, and they're really great at the castle. The management, as far as you know, if I have shows, I want to go on a lecture tour. I just said, hey, I'm going on a lecture tour.
And nobody fills in for you.
No, I think they hire a magician to come down there. They get different. They have a couple different guys. But they have to have a bartender, and then they hire a magician to come
now,
in.
That was a question I was going to get to. I'm glad you brought that up, because I know that you tend bar. Were you a bartender before?
Not at all. So you learned that.
You learned bartending.
Yeah, that was the deal. I said, listen, no one likes working this bar. Nobody makes any money. For years, bartenders complain about working down there. It's like the punishment bar. You show up late for a shift, you're going to work the hat and hair next week. Mm-hmm. Like, it's... there's no money down there. Saturday night, you'll leave with $40 type of thing. Wow. I'd complain about. So I said, listen, I was working as a host there, as a day job. I was doing stand-up comedy and magic, and I was working as a host, one of the guys in the tuxedo starting the shows mm-hmm. part-time. And it took me years to talk my way into that gig. Talking to various, you know, the old general manager, I convinced him, he got fired. I convinced the food and beverage manager, he got fired. Not in that order, a reverse set order. And then, you know, I had to wait for the new general manager, then the new beverage manager. And mm-hmm. that was, I said, listen, nobody wants to work it. It's the only bar I want to work. You teach me to bartend, and mm-hmm. I'll turn that into a good bar. And I did humbly, I say humbly. It's you know, it's always busy down there now.
Well, I just had a podcast.
Went from 2 days to four.
To four. I was going to say, how many nights a week are you there?
Four nights.
Thursday
through Sunday.
Which then leaves your Friday, Saturdays for you to go and do other kinds of
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I'm sorry.
And then usually during the holidays, I'm there 5 nights.
Yeah.
But again, if I get private shows, hey, Saturday, I have a show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never heard no.
Yeah.
And it's never been a problem. I mean, they know, you know, they work with me, I work with them. And
well, I just had on the podcast this last week, Bob Shulian, talking about his grandfather's place, Shulian's Restaurant, Matt Shulian.
Sure.
And he's, of course, doing Magic Bob now, is for Chicago Magic Lounge on Thursdays and Saturdays.
Oh, cool.
And so did you ever get a chance to see Shulian's?
I've never been to Chicago, and it's, trust me, it's a place that I want to go. As a bar magician, and
yeah.
I've you know, I talked my way into that spot, but I had wanted to be a bar magician for a long time. I wanted to be a bar magician.
You've seen Doc work, I guess, when you were in Colorado?
Oh, yeah, of course. I saw Doc work in Colorado. Eric Mead was the biggest influence there on me.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I assume that those were your influences being in Colorado.
Eric Mead and Tom Molica were my influences the most. Doc, of course, but those two guys. When I saw Tom Molica, I went, that's the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, Tom Fuller, you mean, in Atlanta?
Yeah, and it was just on tape. I didn't
get never
to
went
see
there?
Him live, no.
That was an awesome experience. I've been there 3 times. Back when today.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He's
and it's all in the book, I think, which is really great.
Because
minute by minute, his timing, his everything, his patter.
But when I saw him, that just opened... that opened a new door for me, and then I saw Eric, and that was like, yep.
Were you there? Did you see Bob Sheets and C. Spill back when they were there before Doc came?
Or? No, I not. No. Okay. When the. No, Doc.
I didn't know how far back. Okay, so yeah. Doc Riley and Eric, yeah. Eric is writing a book now, I understand, about Tim Conover.
Yeah,
and Tim was really an inspiration to a lot of us as well. I mean, I'm anxious for that book to come out.
I can't wait for that book to come out. Yeah.
I was going to
buy a copy of that for sure, but Eric is. I know Eric. I don't know him very well, but he is one of my top favorite magicians. Molica was my favorite magician. I got to spend just a little time hanging out with him.
What are some memories that you got of Tom?
You know, two magic lives ago, I spent 3 nights in a row. Like, we would just stay after the things. We'd just hang out with Molica and Johnny Thompson and Paul V. Hill and Jared Koff and John Wilson. And that is a heck of a room to be in.
That would be a fly on the wall there. Wow.
Yeah, that was a heck of a room to be in, and we just did that for multiple nights in a row and told stories. And it was, that's my best
Any stories
memory.
You remember?
And it was not long before he passed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yes, but I can never tell them like he told them.
No.
And I can never tell them like Johnny Thompson told them. Yeah. And they were so funny and so great. And but Mullica was definitely, when I saw that at the bar and I went, well, that's the most logical place to do magic. Mm-hmm. You have that thing in between you, and he was just so good.
Well, I mentioned Bob Schuiling. One of the things that he had said, I had heard Doc often say, and that is GTFM. It's important, that you are supposed to be not just doing magic, but it's like, hey, you know, let's. What are you drinking there? You know, and so
yeah, I have sure a little note that I tape up.
Do the same thing
under my bar. Says GTFM.
So you are also tending bar as well as doing magic. I mean, there's no bartender. Yeah, it's just you.
It's me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do both.
Yeah. Tell me what's been one of the most. I'm sure you had some drunk customers. You know, got any stories or something that's happened that's been kind of weird, funny?
I get my share of everything down there. I get. Most of the people at the castle are pretty cool, mm-hmm. because it's a natural place for magic. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is,
they expect magic. They come there for
they
magic.
They expect, and it came for magic. You know, if you see a comedian in the comedy store or a comedian in a bowling alley, they can do the same act, but they're going to get different reactions.
Good point.
You went to the comedy store to see comedy. You went to the bowling alley to bowl, and there happened to be a comedian. It may make you laugh, but you're not really that into it.
Yeah.
So, it's a natural place for that. So, it's already easy. People are dressed up really well, so they're pretty well behaved for the most part. Yes, of course, sometimes we get drunks. I'm a bartender. I deal with drunk individuals.
How do you deal with
it? I just do. Every situation is different.
You've had to cut people off, I'm sure.
Oh, sure. You know, if it gets too bad, I don't deal with it. If it gets too bad, security deals with it. I think I've had security take one person out the entire time I've been down there in 4.5 years, and I didn't get them, and I wouldn't have. Mm-hmm. One of the members said, no, this is ridiculous, and went and got them, and then that, and it's just heckling. But what I realized was, usually when somebody's heckling, they're not being mean. Usually, they just want to be included. And if you do it, yeah, it'll be cool.
So that's what
now,
you do?
If they're heckling and they're mean or they're, you know, abrasive, or then I'll put you in your place.
Yeah. But as far as identifying them as being an alpha male, you're saying it's basically important to recognize
trying to have fun and they want to be part of it. And this is a very conversational environment. Sure. This isn't like
it's
a
not
stage.
TV.
It's not TV, but I'm not on stage. I'm a bartender.
Yeah.
And so they think that they can just talk back to me. Usually people get it, and sometimes they don't. And
I was going to say, it's much more interactive at the bars as opposed to being in the close-up room where they're seeing a set show, you know?
Right.
Because they feel like they're watching TV almost.
Right, there. And then I just had to learn to roll with that. And still sometimes, you know, there's certainly times that I've overreacted or I've come back too hard or, you know, then you lose your whole audience.
No, you don't want to get the audience against you. I mean, yeah.
Right. Well, not only do you not want to do that, but I'm counting on those tips. That's how I feed my kids. Mm-hmm. So that tip jar is going to come out at the end, and if they don't like me, they're not going to tip me. Even if they like the manager, they're going to go, oh, that guy was a jerk.
How do you do that? How do you call for a tip?
All I do is at the end, I say thank you and my name, and I reach over for the tip jar, and I hold it up, and I set it down in the middle of my pad. And
you don't do draw attention or say that I... You know, need to feed my kids, or, you know, going to stay up late and wait to see how much daddy made tonight. Or
I have a couple things that I do occasionally. I don't do it too much there. Usually I just move it over and I you know, hold it up in front of my face and set it down so everybody sees it. But I do have some gags. I do a trick where I'm talking about, you know, a process, and I say, I don't have that much time on my hands. I have a 3-year-old and an 11-month-old, and I take a picture of them up off top of the bar, and I show a picture of my kids, and I say, this is Charlie Danger, and this is Maximus. And I say, you know, I'm just going to put this over here, get that out of the way, and I set it in the tip jar.
The tip jar.
Right? And then everybody laughs.
Yeah.
I do a routine sometimes, fast and loose, the chain. I do Paul V. Hill's routine, which is great.
I don't think I've seen his routine.
Yeah, it's really good. He's got some really interesting throws up in the air.
Oh.
He does it. And I do that routine. And actually worked it out with Paul. Paul's also one of my dearest friends. I just really love his magic. I love him. I love him and his magic. Mm-hmm. He's just a phenomenal guy and magician. Yeah. But I worked with him kind of on this routine and a way of, you know, you're going to bet. And I'm like, you know, you don't have to put anything up, of course. You came to the Magic Castle to have a good time. I don't expect you to lose money, but this right. is a gambling game. So I tell you what, you have everything to win and nothing to lose. And I reach over and I take a dollar bill out of my tip jar. And I say, if you win, you get, and I look at it and I stop and I say, you know what? You can't even buy a candy bar on the way home for this. And I drop it back in the tip jar and now I take out a five. Mm-hmm. And now I just told you, don't tip me a dollar.
Because you can't buy anything.
Because it's not very much money.
Yeah.
And that's all I say about that. And now I take the five out and I do that the first round. The second round, I reach in and I take out a 10. And I say, you know, you can, I'll tell you what, we're going to, I'll let that ride. $15 for you. If you mm-hmm. can find that $15, right? Place, right? Yeah. And then the third time I go in, I take out a 20 and I go for another 10. And then I notice the 20 and I dig through and I take out the 20 and I say, oh, somebody was awesome. I had a really cool customer or something. And then that's it. I don't ever, you know, that, but they get it.
Sure.
They get
sure.
what I'm saying.
Funny.
And then, you know, now it's $35. That's, you can go upstairs and split a burger.
Yeah, fill up a gas tank. Interesting. Well, I would like to move a different direction as to creativity, as far as routining and weaving these routines together. You said, like, as a bartender, of course, that you have something that is going to be a common theme. And last time I worked at the castle, I had movies and Hollywood as a theme, since we were in Tinseltown, basically. And mm-hmm. so everything I did tied into the movies and predictions mm-hmm. and cards that had posters and whatnot. And so you would use things with bar things. So do you intentionally have a goal when you are creating an act of saying that you want to have this overarching theme that people will remember that this is what you were trying to get across?
100%.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, always. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just putting a bunch of tricks together.
One unrelated thing after another just because, hey, right. I found this. This is cool.
Right.
Okay.
And so, no, when I'm putting an act together, the first question is, well, what is my artist statement? And that's a personal thing. Mm-hmm. What do I want them to say about me when they walk out of this room? What do I want them to feel when they walk out of this room?
Boy, that's important.
And, well, how do I want them to feel about me as they walk out of this room? And but it's not just about me, I guess. That doesn't sound right to me when I say that. But I haven't externalized this. I haven't said this out loud. It's how I want them to feel. So it's as about how they feel about me is irrelevant.
Seen?
If they feel the way I want them to feel at the end of the show, it will include me and it will be positive towards me. Mm-hmm. But yes, oh no, how do I want them to feel about the universe in which they live? How do mm-hmm. I want them to feel about their place here? You know, this is
pretty deep.
Yeah, the life is pretty deep yeah. too, though. And this universe is a great big mystery. You know, and you know, we live. It's the if even if it's just a break from the perennial ennui, you know, I can give them, you know, from the existential bummer that they might be facing of not knowing any of these mysteries, and show them that instead this mystery is a beautiful thing mm-hmm. and it's what makes life worth living. And I don't say that in my show, and I don't think you should say the message that you want to get across. That's not the point. You need to get that message across through your magic. And so that's what I do.
By presenting a mystery and not a trick.
Yes, but the whole theme, the every word, everything, you know, that builds on to the next thing. And yes, I mean, yes, I'm doing tricks. I'm just saying, I'm not saying I'm trying to change their lives when they walk out of there.
Yeah.
I'm saying that you find what you want them to feel, whatever that is, what you want them to take away, and then you build an act that will do that. That's okay. That's what you tried to do. You okay. tried to piece magic tricks together in a way that will make them feel the way you want them to feel or think the way you want them to think when they leave your show.
Okay.
And that's a hard thing to do.
It is, but you need to, first of all, know yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think I've heard you say before that you feel like that your magic is an extension of your own personality. Is that right, would you say, or not?
Yeah, of course. It's my way of connecting. I mean, the only point of being an entertainer doing this is to connect with human beings. And mm-hmm. I do that through magic. That's the tool that I'm using for this. And it's because I think it's a good one. I think it's the tool that I was drawn to. Yeah, it's a rare skill, but it's the one that I was drawn to as a kid. And mm-hmm. I like that feeling that it can give you, that awe.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And is your favorite instrument cards or coins or which, or kind of both? I know that you do both very well, but...
Oh, thank you. Cards. I like cards mm-hmm. best. I guess if I had to only do one and I couldn't do the other, I would choose cards.
When you were talking this evening, you were saying that you were at the lecture... For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, I just heard his lecture earlier this evening, and as you were presenting each of the tricks, particularly the card tricks, you're saying, well, this was an inspiration, or I started with this routine, and then I added this or put in whatever. So, in other words, it is something that others have created, but then you've really built on, you know?
Yeah, standing on the shoulder of giants, sure. my posy is comprised of other men's flowers, for mm-hmm. sure. You know, there's only so many things that you can do in magic. You make something appear, you make something disappear, you make something transpose. I mean, the ideas have been thought, mm-hmm. and there's so many genius ideas out there. And, you know, if I read a trick from somebody that I like, it doesn't mean it's going to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But when I read one that I think I can make work for me, and so... I change it as much as I can to make it mine.
It seems
unlike what other people are doing. I don't want them to walk into another room and go, oh, that's that same thing that guy at the bar did.
Yeah.
And if they can do that, and occasionally, you know, if I use something that you can buy and there's, you know, I still try to make the presentation touching or mm-hmm. or meaningful or funny or whatever it is I'm going for on that thing. But like... Jamie Grant's beautiful trick Industrial Revelation is something that I do at the bar.
Do you?
But, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. I stop doing it because I see other guys around doing it. And it's like, well, I don't want to do anything that they're going to see in another room.
I would say also, it seems to me from what I've seen, is that your inspirations have been more of your contemporaries than of the classics. Jack Carpenter and others, but whenever you talk about Homer Luwag and all the other guys, Chris Kenner and the guys who are influencers.
Well, when it comes to that coin type of stuff, that, you know, that trick I was showing, those three coin routines, the three fly, those type of routines, I mean... Chris Korn, Chris Kenner, Homer Luwag, mm-hmm. Troy Hoosier, those are the guys that were the biggest, you know, influence.
But they're still contemporaries. I mean, it's not like Vernon's age, you know.
Kind of. Right. Well, they weren't doing that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Their magic was different.
More cards and stuff.
You know, the coins across I did earlier, the later one, though, that was more like that, right? But it's still with some of those newer styles.
Do you find that the people who come to the castle kind of, coming full circle back to that again, have different styles, or do you feel like that there is...
Oh, yeah, of course.
A new edge. I mean, it seems to me that there are classics that I used to think were great when I'd see Bruce Servan work. But, you know, he was doing popping halves and sponge bunnies, but he was doing them great, you know.
Yeah.
And I've got to wonder if I would still have that sense of awe watching him now versus watching Chris Korn or Paul Veal, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. But at the time, it sure was great, wasn't it?
Oh, it really was, you know.
So he didn't have that to compare it to. So maybe if he had seen that new stuff, he would have adopted it right away. He was a smart magician. He sees what's good.
I've heard that said about John Lennon. If he were still alive, he would be doing rap songs. I mean, he would keep up, you know.
He probably would be.
You got to go with what's happening.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the case. But I don't discount those guys of old. Charlie Miller, my son's named Charlie, and my other son's named Max.
Yeah.
That's not a mistake.
Right.
Those guys are huge inspirations for me. Mm-hmm. Vernon and I wish I could go see JOC and see all those guys. I would love that. Yeah. I didn't live in that time. So the guys that I grew up watching were Tom Molica and Eric Mead. And so those are the guys that I went, I like that. And then I, you know, then I got into the classics and realized what those other guys had to offer.
So they were your gateway, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I was fortunate to see them pretty early on. I was fortunate to meet Jason England pretty early on. He put me on a definite path for sure. He was a big inspiration for me.
Yeah. I don't see you do a lot of finger flicking, you know, the way the Dan and Dave Buck do. I mean, there is another group of people, it seems like.
The cardistry that, and
exactly.
The flourishes.
You know, what do you think about that?
Oh, I think it's beautiful.
It is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think.
But as far as doing flourishes, I mean, even if you could,
I do flourishes a very set time. I do it very early in my set because I don't want them to think I'm just a bartender. And so I want them to know that they're.
So you establish that early.
Yes, and then I stop doing the flourishes. I do it in one routine. I spring the cards, and I do it from far. I do it a couple times. I do a one-handed cut, and then I do the hot shot cut, and then I flick a card back, kind of like Paul Harris style, but just the one card where it flips back from the right hand to the left hand, and that's it.
And they go, okay, got it.
Right, and that's all in one routine, and then no more.
Okay.
Now it's just magic, and now it's all very empty hands, and I want you to see that those hands are empty, and I want conditions to be very clear. It's not fancy. But I got your attention. So the first trick, I have your interest, now I have your attention.
Yeah, it's like, wait, what happened? And so now you got it, and they're focused on you then at that point. Now, when you're doing things outside the Magic Castle, and that's going to be, I assume, a strolling corporate environment type of things that you do?
Yeah, sometimes I do strolling.
And so are there things that you do, obviously, that are different there than you would do at a table or behind the bar?
Yeah, of course. I have separate material for that. I do... tricks I just do in the walk around. Usually when I get hired for a show like that, I try to sell them on the idea of a station.
Oh, really?
I don't
come
like
to you?
Strolling.
Really?
So I set up a table in a corner and then, you know, three or four chairs in front of that table.
You sit at the table?
I stand behind it. I almost always do magic standing. And then they come to me. And then it's much more like that same thing at the bar. I could do little sets and then I finish and a new crowd comes in and I do it again. But in strolling, you have zero prestige. It's the hardest type of magic, at least for me. I feel like a jerk walking up to you.
Interrupting your conversation.
Yeah, and I just did last month I did a gig and it was a good one, like money-wise. It was a good offer and it was a nice gig. There were multiple magicians there. There were about five of us working it. It was a big one. And you know, I walk I think the lady's name who party it was Kathy, and I walked up to this group and I'm like, hi, you know, I introduced myself, I'm one of the magicians, blah blah blah, would you guys like to see magic? And she's like, I guess if it would make Kathy happy, she hired so many of you, go ahead, do your trick.
Wow.
Dance and now I got to stand here in front of this group and do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hate that. I don't like walk around magic.
So what do you do to overcome that?
Because if it's, you'd be good. Good at what? To show them something good.
Yeah.
And again, my interest now, you have my attention.
I always feel like for groups like that, I like a Hundy 500. I mean, it's like when you make hundreds of dollars, it's like, wait a minute, he's just walking around with... I mean, they're thinking subliminally that he's one of us.
Well, that's a good one, too. I mean, what would you do if you had magic powers?
Yeah.
Well, I'd have a lot of money.
You got their attention, so it goes to that again. Right. And then it's like you can get into something.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And I find there are different opening tricks for women than there are for men. I'm sure you believe that as well.
No.
No? Really? Because I know that men tend to like some cards and gambling and things, whereas women, from my experience, would prefer to have...
Yeah, women may not think they like it, but when they see it, they like it.
Okay. Okay.
I guess that's your approach on it. It depends on your approach, maybe. If you come off opening up with a gambling routine, yeah, that may mm-hmm. not work, but I don't present it like that, and it's never as a challenge.
Do you have a set that you go from group to group, so you have the same three or five tricks?
Oh, yeah. That's funny. On walk around, you know, you always pack 20 things in your pocket, and you end up doing two of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. Especially if it's a busy party. So, yeah, usually what I do is I'll say, like, well, the first hour, I'll do these three things. So I'll walk up, and I'll do coins across, and then I'll do a card routine or two or something else. Mm-hmm. And then the next hour, I'm going to do these three things. So mm-hmm. even if everybody sees me twice, they're not going to see the same things, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
Maybe you walk up, do three things for a group, move on.
Yeah. If you're going to be there for a couple of hours, that's kind of the way I feel,
but
too.
But so. I always have my pockets full of stuff I never use. That's just how...
I'm glad I'm not the only one. I mean, no. I don't want to feel like I'm a walking magic shop.
But I do bring enough things that...
No,
I never got over that. It's like I reason that out in my brain. I know these are the three things I'm going to do. But I'm always like, oh, yeah, no. And I plan it and I bring it and I never do it.
Yeah. And how about stand-up? You used to do comedy clubs.
Yeah.
Did you do magic with the comedy then as well? Or no, really?
No, just stand-up. Mm-hmm. And I very earnestly wanted to try doing that. And I'm glad I did. It changed the way I do magic, and it changed the way I approach an audience.
Because you learn improvisation? Or?
Yeah, I guess there's some of that. But no, because I learned to manipulate an audience. I learned how to control their energy. And I mentioned that a little bit tonight. I got into that just a bit.
You got time now to go into it a little bit more. How do you manipulate an audience?
Well, I'll give you this example, I guess, and how I learned it. When I was doing stand-up, of course, I'm watching all my heroes over and over and over and over again. Bill Hicks was my biggest inspiration for most comedians today, I would think. He was brilliant, and George Carlin. Those were the two for me, George Carlin and Bill Hicks. And Carlin was a master of manipulating the audience. I think sometimes Bill didn't care. He was really just doing it for himself, and he would just lie down on the stage and scream at you sometimes if he didn't like the set. But Carlin, he played with people like they were toys, and he would... He had a lot of little tricks, but one, like I was mentioning in the lecture, is you bottle up their energy. So he would lead into a thing, and he would give a punchline, and as they start to laugh, he steps on his own line, and he starts again on something else. And as he got older, his material became even more that. He started listing things, funny things, and then the basic example is. Like in the rule of three, you always hear that in the comedy world, right? You have three things. You establish a premise, you support the premise, and then you turn it on its head, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the funny. But you can also do jokes that way, and you do magic tricks that way. I don't design a routine with just three beats. It has that, but I put a routine together with three things and a theme. So. The time travel routine is three different tricks all in the same thing that seems like one long trick, but it's three different tricks. But it's those three. Mm-hmm. So, but that's not the rule of three that I mean. That's not what I'm talking about with this. This is, he would do it like three different jokes. So you say, well, it is more like that. So you say, blah, 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 punchline. They start to laugh and blah, 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 blah. And now I step on that laugh myself, and it's like corking a bottle. Right, put screwing that cap back on the bottle before it overflows. And now you say another punchline. Again, they start to do it, and again you step on it. And now, by the time you get to the third punchline, even if it's the weakest of all of them, the body language does it. So he says the third punchline, his hands drop, and now they know.
They release it.
And now it's, and the whole crowd goes wild. Well, why? Because instead of getting a ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha. Ha ha ha. I got three little laughs. I got one really big one.
Yeah.
I would take that one really big one.
So you kind of step on that in order to hold it until the end for a bigger reaction. Yeah.
And by doing that, you're putting your audience in sync. Their energy starts to match. Hmm. Right? They all just experienced the same thing. Well, magic does that naturally too. They experience something together. But now if you can keep them from releasing it together, you can keep them on that same path together, then you can start to surf that energy. You can build it up, you can bring it down, you can start to manipulate them.
And so is that how that you structure your routines, is to have those kinds of peaks and valleys, I guess, the way that Henning Nelms would be talking about and the magic showmanship is kind of...
Yeah, I don't mean like peaks and valleys as in this next trick's not very good. I don't do that. Every trick should be a closer.
Mm-hmm.
They're all good. But it's, or at least and that's the goal.
Of course.
I don't want it to go, but you could certainly lighten the mood. I mean, of when I allow them to release their energy and...
You control it.
Yeah.
The timing on that.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important if you ever work restaurants to be able to do something that you say it's going to be everything strong enough so that when the waiter comes
exactly.
with the food, it's like you can stop right
and
there.
And that's at the bar is the exact same thing. They may have to go, the Magic Castle has a schedule, they got to go see a show or it's our dinner time and now the six people at the front of the bar get up. Well, I want that last thing to be something that's going to get that tipped in the jar. So
sure.
Everything needs to be like that for
me. So everything's a closer for
you,
basically.
Everything's a closer.
Huh, that's one way of looking at it. I hadn't thought of it that way. As opposed to when you're in the close-up parlor or close-up gallery and there...
Yeah, then you can build a little bit more, right? Now you structure it, so...
It's more of a theater.
Yeah, not that this trick is weaker, but it's definitely not the thing that you're going to close on because this is setting the mood for the next thing. This patter that I'm talking about in this routine is going to come back in this, or it's going to lead naturally into this next idea. And this is the big idea. This is the big finish. But if you needed to hear this part first in order to get into that, right?
Right.
I say everything's a closer. It's not. I mean, it's not like the point is the end. The point of doing magic is to do the magic. So you want to experience that throughout the whole thing. Of course,
right.
It's not. You don't dance to get to a place on the floor. You dance to dance. You do the shows. Every part of the show should be
right,
entertaining and good.
Right. That's a good way of trying to build a show. That sounds great. Well, listen, I appreciate the time a lot.
Yeah,
and
pleasure.
That name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question to you is, what is your word or what is your phrase or what's your philosophy of life? Doesn't have to be a word. It can be a phrase, like I said.
Well, I'll tell you, what's important to me, I guess, is communicating and understanding human beings because we're all on this ride together. And that's what this is. It's connecting, I guess.
Hmm.
I want to connect. I want to connect with my audience. I want to connect with people. And I got something out of the Howard Thurston book by Jim Steinmeier. You know, he would always peek out of, I love my audience. I love you. I love you. I love you. And I do that before every show at the bar. I go back by my cooler where they can't see me, and I turn my back to them, and I say, I love my audience. I love my audience. I love my audience. And I turn around, and I'm in it.
Yeah. When I go to the restaurant, wherever I'm working in a restaurant, I always, as I'm walking in, I put a big smile on my face before you walk in, that they see that your teeth are smiling.
Like
you have a positive attitude.
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of leave everything behind and think positive, and I put on a smile.
Even if you don't want to, it changes it. But then you'll just naturally start smiling.
It'll naturally start to come about. Whenever you do connect with an audience, do you feel like, okay, we've made that connection? Do you then go on, or do you feel like I need to stop right there?
Oh, no. I mean, I'd let it go to its natural course.
Okay.
I know when to end. I mean, at least I hope I know when to end the shows.
I know sometimes you
talk about... At the bar, I'm very free to do that, right? Because I can end a show where I want to end a show.
Sure.
In the close-up room, though, well, I got to go the 20 minutes.
Right.
So.
But when you're saying it's going to be a closer and everything has to be a closer, I think at some point you're going to, you know, that you can't do anything to top that. It's like, in their mind, you
I mean, I have tricks that I do in this order. These are the tricks I close my show on.
Okay.
But that means if you saw this one earlier and you had to leave for dinner, you're leaving on a good one.
Sure.
So, I mean, I do have my closers, and I don't just like randomly like, oh, that's the closer. But it's not unusual for people to have to go, oh, I'm so sorry, we got to go. Our dinner reservations. Or our tickets, we're late for this Palace show.
Right.
I mean, I get that. They're multiple other theaters in there, so I'm not upset about that. I just want to make sure whatever the last thing they saw is, they're going to walk out or they're going, oh, that was good.
And talk about that during dinner. That's right.
Right.
Well, I like your magic word over there of connecting. I think that's a very important thing.
Yeah, thank you.
With the audience. So, for the magic word.
What's your magic word?
What's life if you can't live it?
Yeah.
I think it's important to live in the moment and yes. do everything that you can. And if you're not living to the fullest that you can, then you're just not living life. And so what's life if you can't live it? You know, is what's the point of everything?
I like
you know?
Awesome.
Few people have ever asked me mine. So thank you.
Of course. Mike.
So
I'm here to learn from everybody.
Here we are. And I've learned from you then this evening and also the lecture. Thank you very much for your time. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Mike Pisciotta, and this is Scotty out.
Thank you, Mike. That was particularly enlightening, and I enjoyed our conversation together. Lots of things that I like to go back and listen to a second or third time. I thought that was kind of an interesting idea as far as how to get some tips, kind of the psychology behind what you were doing and saying to the audience, plus the way that you develop your act and your creativity is amazing. Again, congratulations, Mike, on being the Close-Up Magician of the Year for the Academy of Magical Arts last year, and I look forward to seeing you at the castle the next time that I come out for a visit. And I recommend that any of you guys get a chance to go out and perform or to visit the Magic Castle, be sure and go down to the Hat in the Hair Pub and to catch Mike doing his thing down there, mixing drinks and mystery in equal parts. So now let's take a few moments to review a couple of products that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies. Over the past few weeks, we have had a lot of reviews that have been more close-up, specifically with cards and coins, or even on at-the-table lectures that have been more involved directly with close-up. And this week, we're going to take it to the stage. The next two effects we're going to talk about are things that really can only be done or should be done on the stage or in a parlor environment. In other words, this is something that could be done for a fairly large group of people, but certainly could be seen from the stage for an even larger group of people. Looks great on television, and in one particular case, it has no angle problems necessarily, and the other one might have a few, but because you're going to be on stage, it's not going to really be much of a problem. So first up, we're going to talk about Chris Talbot's Bowled Over, which is a bowling ball production that is a bowling ball that comes out of a gift bag. This is the type of gift bag that you receive whenever it's like a birthday, a wedding shower, anniversary, holiday gift or something like that. You get the idea. It's those rather large silvery or gaily colored bags that has a little handle. The idea is that you can walk on stage with this and set it down, and then at any time during your show that you can reach down, pick up the bag, and tilt it upside down as you're holding it over your head and look inside to see what's inside. Well, what falls out can be a silk handkerchief. It could be a feather. Basically something light. It could be confetti. Again, use your imagination of whatever type of light stuff that you would like to have basically kind of shower down on you as you pick it up and look inside the bag. As you hold it away from your head is when you would actually release the bowling ball, and it lands with a solid thump on your stage. Now, this is something, again, that is a great opener. I have been doing Kevin James bowling ball production from the drawing pad for a long number of years, and I've used that on cruise ships and every place else. It's just a great trick, but it's one of those things I think that a lot of people have seen, particularly magicians, but it also has a lot of impact. It's a great opening effect because it's something you can walk right out and grabs their attention immediately, and people are going to watch the rest of what you're doing because of the loud noise it makes and the sudden production that they're just not expecting. Similarly, that's what happens with this, where a bowling ball comes out of what appears to be an otherwise empty gift bag. This was an idea that was based upon Andrew Main's bowling ball production, same kind of a thing where a bowling ball comes out of a bag. I am not certain as to the gimmick that Andrew has in his, but apparently this must be different enough that Chris Talbot has gone ahead and released this, and he does give full credit to Andrew on this. All the gimmicks that you need, I should say, the the necessary something in order to make this is included when you buy this trick. And the instructions are online. It gives you a link where you can go to download and watch the video on how to make this, because it is a do-it-yourself or a DIY kind of thing. I think it's important for me to say here as well that bowling ball is not included. I recommend it. It is a pretty cool thing. Once again, that you walk on the stage, it could be even left on the stage before you come out. However, I would recommend walking out with it and then using it as an opening production. Or again, you can set it down and then produce it whenever you want during the course of your show. And so there are a few different angles, but whenever you're performing this on stage, that you can set it close enough to your curtain, which is going to be upstage, and people are not going to be seated behind you to see. I'll explain now. There's a hole in the back of the bag, or the bulkiness of the bag is punching through. So I think that it does have some angles, but nothing to really worry about, because, again, this is not a close-up trick. It's a parlor or a stage trick. So I would really recommend this. This is a pretty cool trick. I have been looking for the right kind of gift bag in order to make one of these up for myself, because I intend on using this and putting into a show after I've rehearsed this a number of times, because I think it has the same impact as the bowling ball from the drawing pad. So again, I would recommend this. It's called Chris Talbot's Bowled Over Bowling Ball Production. Next up, we have The End of My Rope Trick by Chris Philpott. Chris is a very ingenious gentleman, and I have, I think, just about everything that he has put out. French postcards, 100 monkeys, Narcissus, and others. He is just, a lot of times, has ideas that have to do and are particularly applicable to the mind reader, the mentalist. This particular trick, the end of my rope trick, is something that can be presented on stage, and it looks good from the parlor also. This is one of those tricks in which that it's pretty good for from any angle, and there are a lot of variations on the DVD that he explains. This is something that can be made up. Once again, it's a DIY kind of thing, but it is really fooled the pants off me. If you just watch just the video, you're going to say, wait a minute, back that up. And a little bit reminds me of the Mack King rope trick. I have always loved rope tricks, and that particular one where Mack cuts up the rope into several pieces and then they all come back together, it kind of looks like that. I'm sure this is a completely different method that Chris teaches in this DVD, but it has the same impact from the point that you coil up the rope, you pull it apart, and then you have a spectator cut all of the ropes. And I mean, this is something they're doing. And then when you toss the rope into the air, the pieces are gone, and it's all back into one piece again. That's as clean as it gets, and it can be explained just in one sentence like that. So what more would you want from a trick? This is really something that I would recommend. I've been doing rope tricks forever. In fact, that was what first got me involved in magic, was doing rope tricks for the Boy Scouts at the scout meetings when I was a scoutmaster. And then my first magic show I had performed actually was a majority of things had to do with ropes. I still enjoy ropes, but I'm pretty selective in what I'm trying to find and what I like. And I think this is one that I would like and probably will be putting into the show. I like this DVD also because Chris, again, goes into a lot of detail and a lot of variations. He has one which is completely impromptu and one which uses a little gimmick and then one which has a very complicated type of a gimmick. He is joined in the DVD partway through by Lehman Parker of David and Lehman fame. You might remember David and Lehman, who had performed 100 Monkeys on America's Got Talent using Howie Mandel on television a couple of years ago, and had advanced pretty far in the talent competition. Lehman has some good work on this particular trick. And let me say also that the variations that Chris explains also include other kinds of things. Obviously, if it can be cut and restored and it is long and narrow, you can do it with anything. He teaches you how to do it with crepe paper, like at a party, with string. You can do it with wires, you know, that if you just kind of think about it, you can probably do this with
your microphone cord. That'd be kind of an interesting thing. I don't think he talked about that, but that would be something else. Would be a variation on that, but just a variety of things. At the end, he goes into detail for a ring on string routine. I'm not big on the ring on string. I would like that, you know, the finger ring on rope or string is different, but just the Phil Wilmarth and other guys, Tom Craven, others who have had a lot of variations on the ring and string. It's really not for me, but if you're a ring on string guy, he's got some really good ideas, basically where that you would coil up the string and you can put the rope on all of the strings rather than just through one string. So in other words, you can coil the string around your hand or the rope and then put the ring right through all of the layers. Kind of cool for those of you who do that. Overall, again, I know he goes into a lot of detail on this, and there is a bonus routine that if you send an email to him, that he will send you this other additional routine if you're 18 or older. And I say that because there is some danger involved. It's a hangman kind of a thing, and there is potential for danger if it's not done properly. And so anyhow, that is a bonus thing that you can get from him is if you just send an email to him. Anyhow, this is one I recommend. We'll probably be adding to my routine. I like the impromptu nature of the one that is improvisation. I think it has great merits. And again, the one that would require a little bit of a setup and a DIY is beautiful. Love it. This is great. It could be done on the street. It could be done on stage. It could be done in a parlor. I would recommend it. And again, it's called The End of My Rope Trick by Chris Philpott. Well, there you have it. Two more excellent effects that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies, and you can purchase from your favorite dealer. And hopefully that the Magic Word Podcast is one of your favorite dealers, if not your most favorite. All you need to do is to go to the website and click on the Magic Store, and it will take you to the area where you can click on and purchase any of the items that you see there. However, if there's something that Murphy's does sell that you would like to buy, let me know, and I can arrange to have that shipped to you as well. Because every purchase that you make helps support the Magic Word Podcast, and we appreciate it. Well, that's going to be a wrap for another week. We have a couple of really great podcasts coming up over the next few weeks, and I encourage you to make sure that you subscribe to the Magic Word Podcast so that way that you don't miss another single episode. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook at the Magic Word Podcast, and you can follow us on Twitter at Magic Word Pod. On Instagram, I'm Scott Wells Magic, and I think that's probably about it. You know, a few other places as well, but I think if you have any suggestions or questions or someone you would like for me to interview, or perhaps a product you'd like for me to review, just let me know. Drop me an email. You can send it to scott@themagicwordpodcast.com, and I'll be sure and get back to you. I appreciate all of you guys supporting the Magic Word and also for listening each week. And again, I hope to bring you many more episodes with a lot of magicians every week, and that you continue to listen and enjoy. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and try to connect with your audience. This is Scotty out.